My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change ups, the cast won't break up. Even when that $1 million contract show up, a stand up guy who's a stand up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, November 7th, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. If you're really into this thing, I need you to go over to Apple Podcasts, give this show a 5-star review, let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. And if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival and subscribe for $3 a month for hours and hours and hours of bonus content. This is episode 543. I have a super special return guest, comedian and podcaster Darren Patterson from the SNL Nerds podcast. I'm going to share that conversation that I had with him, with you, in a few moments. Right now, I just want to talk to you. I just want to break the fourth wall. It's not actually Sunday that I'm recording this. I'm recording this on a Saturday morning to be exact. I am post exercise bike workout. I'm post great grain cereal breakfast, my shower. I am on episode 2 of Love Life with William Jackson Harper and Jessica Williams. So good. It was so good. I'm locked in. It's so good. It's good seeing blackness in that way, man. I'm loving it. I just finished the first season, hopefully not the last, of Why the Last Man, FX on Hulu. Solid show. Shout out to Jess Salguero, friend of the pod. Great seeing her on there with a bit of a meaty role. And Amber Tamblyn liked one of my tweets. I tweeted about it. People are just kind of, you know, every time women get something and it's like kind of celebrated and, you know, people try to shit on it. But I'm not trying to be super defensive, but I thought the show, it's a solid show. It has its issues, but it's a very solid show and it's fun. And yeah, there's a female agenda, but like I get to episode 6 and there's this like this bathtub scene with Olivia Thirlby's character and then all these other women who have like formed this faction. And it's a bathtub scene where they're all like just, you know, taking washing themselves. And it's women of different shapes, sizes, of color, naked. And it's like, I think that was for the dudes and people and lesbians. I think that was mutual. I think they look great. And I tweeted about that and Amber Tamblyn liked it. I don't know if she knew. She might have knew what I was talking about. It was beautiful women. It's a good scene. At least just you get to episode 6 and it's a little treat for you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for being a man there. But so it goes. They were looking good and it's a solid show. What else? I want to tell you two things. Shout out to Keith and Ronan. Shout out to Keith and Ronan for getting back to me on the Jamaican beef patties and Caribbean food. Keith sent me a Instagram link to this spot in Hartford that I need to check out. Hopefully next year, if I get booked at the somewhere in Connecticut, I will check that place out, Keith. Thank you, brother. Yeah, I'd be really interested in checking that out. And Ronan gave me a spot in Brooklyn, so I gotta check that out. A couple weeks ago, I was talking about how, maybe I think it was just on social media, I was talking about how the Reese's pumpkins are the best version of Reese's other than the peanut butter cup. So we know the peanut butter cup is ideal. We know that is the standard bearer for obviously the greatest candy ever made. But in other iterations, other versions, my favorite, because I love movies and stuff like that, and they used to be a good movie treat, the Reese's Bites, the discontinued Reese's Bites that I think they were discontinued in 03 or 04 because somebody fucking choked on them. And they were like these goober. It's basically chocolate covered peanut balls. That's basically what it was. And those to me were my favorite. So the pumpkins just like some, I think somebody was tweeting about this, and I think I had talked about it before. I don't know if that person was talking about it before me, but either way, we agreed about that. We agreed on that shit, and it was just fantastic. And I had never had the pumpkins before. So what I should have done was gotten more of them during the season. So they're not anymore, but I did find some Reese's peanut butter bats. I found some of those last night in Duane Reade, and I think they're phenomenal. They're the best. I mean, for a while, it had been like the seasonal candy, like it had been the Christmas time half pound Reese's that you can get, you know, for the holidays, the 2 half-pound cups. And I found some last night. I was randomly in 7-Eleven getting some ginger ale. And I was like, oh, y'all got this. And it was like $18. So I think I posted on Twitter, like on social media, it's the most wonderful time of the year because those candies are back. There's one night after a show that I did, like I think it might have been post-Christmas. And I was at 7-Eleven and they just had like those big ass half pound Reese's. And it was like $5 because they were like trying to get rid of them. I think I bought 2 of them. It was fucking amazing. That was an amazing night. I had a killer set that night, bro. And I got those Reese's cups. I need a girlfriend. That was a fun night. So let me tell you this New York story. Look, I'll try to be brief with it. But you know what? This is my podcast. I can make this as long as I want. And speaking of this being my podcast, I think the show's going to go on a mini hiatus. I have never taken a real break from this show. Patreon folks, don't worry. You will get your content. But I want to try to get some more conversations on deck before to take a break and do some episodes and backlog and get some stuff out. We'll see what happens. But I think for a couple weeks I need to take a break just for my sanity. So I'm saying it now that I need to take a bit of a break. I've been doing this show all by myself or on my own, pretending he's beside me. Remember that when Joey did that on Dawson's Creek? Katie Holmes did it on Dawson's Creek, and then that's when Dawson knew that he was in love with her, not, you know, the girl, his hot friend that would climb through his window for years and be in his bed. She had to get gussied up and for a fucking talent show for him to realize, oh, she's hot, you know, whatever. But that's the problem with the script. Anyway, so I think I'm just gonna take, I've been doing this for like almost 9 years, and you know, I just think I'm gonna take a bit of a, I think I owe myself a couple weeks. I think I do. So I'll be back. Patreon folks, do not fret. You will get your allotted episodes, and you might even get a little more. But I think I'm going to take a little bit of a break from the main feed. So that being said, I want to tell you this story and get you to my conversation with Darren. So I feel like I'm a fully fledged New Yorker now. Like I'm not I live in Jersey for life, whatever, until LA calls me. No, I'm just joking. I love the East Coast. So I feel like I'm fully in engaged in being in New York. So the past couple of nights they've been paving the streets, the crosswalks in Hell's Kitchen. My parking garage is there's two entrances. There's an entrance on 50th Street and there's an entrance on 49th. So Thursday night I'm walking back to the parking garage from the theater, and I see that I didn't notice that they were doing work on the crosswalk. And I get my car, I'm driving out, I see it. And I see these like cylinders, these big cylinders. They're big plastic cylinders in the fucking crosswalk. And I was like, I don't have time for this shit. And this is the 49th Street exit. And usually at night, the 50th Street exit is closed. And so I'm like, I'm tired. I need to get home. I've been just out all day. I need to fucking get home. If I could just get home, everything will be all right. So I get out of my car. Those dudes aren't doing shit. And I just move the fucking thing, move that big ass cylinder, and I'm getting back in my car. And the guy was like, hey, what are you doing? I said, I'm trying to get out of here. I said, I got to go home. I'm in the parking garage. I'm trying to go home. And then one of the black construction workers comes over to me, because I'm a big guy too. Like those dudes are big. I'm big too. And I have a hoodie on, which makes me even more threatening. So I fit in with them. And I'm just like, I got to get home. And the black guy comes over. He's like, okay, just be careful. You know, just go over slowly. And he just like walked me through. He just walked beside the car. And then a white guy was like, hey, turn your lights on. Like, he just felt like he had to say something. But my lights were on. It's just that my left headlight was out. So I need to get that shit replaced. That's how you know when your shit needs to get replaced, where somebody says something. Yeah, you get your turn your lights on. He just felt like he had to say something, even though he was right. I need to get that shit fixed. And so that was, man, I felt good. I was like, yeah, I'm not going to let these people of New York, you know, like, and I did have my jersey. So I had jersey tags. So that's probably why that white guy got hyped. And, but I was probably fucking something. I didn't fuck anything. Fuck that. I felt like I was a New Yorker in that moment. I felt like I was somebody that was a part of the ecosystem. That's what it was. I felt like I was a part of that ecosystem. Hey, I'm trying to get out of here. Hey, give me some linguine. And for people like Mike Tirico and people of his ilk, I'm sorry if I have defamed your community. I'm sorry. So the next night, I'm walking up 9th Avenue going to my garage, and I see that now not only are they things blocked off, there's a steamroller in front of the 49th Street exit. And I'm like, oh shit. And I was like, and it looked like they were almost done. So this is like 10 minutes to 11. And I said, you know what, let me walk into this Duane Reade and get a couple things, and then just see if they're done by the time I get over there. And so that's where I find the Reese's bats, which I have not had yet. I just threw them in the freezer, and I did get those last night, and I got some detergent, and that's all I got. And so I go in to get my car. Okay, so as I'm going to the garage, I see that there's a guy trying to do what I did last night, and he was unsuccessful. And the guy was like, hey, what are you doing? Hey, oh, oh. And he starts getting on the guy. And he's like, no, you got to go the other way. You got to go the other way. You got to go somewhere, but not through here. And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, oh, shit, son. And so I go to the garage and I get my keys. And I was like, how do I get out of here if they're paving? And they said, just go out the other way. And I was like, oh, thanks. So I avoided conflict. I was able to just leave out of the 50th Street exit and get the fuck out of there. So I avoided the conflict because I didn't want to fight anybody at 11 p.m., you know? Who wants to do that? So I got out of there. That's my little New York story. I felt empowered on Thursday, and so much so that I was able to avoid conflict like somebody who does not want to fight anybody. So that's it. All right, so that's that. Let's get you to the conversation with Darren Patterson. So Darren, I just reached out to him, and he hadn't been on the show in quite some time, and I just wanted to reach out, and this is evidence of us having a conversation, two comics shooting the shit, talking about stuff and things, and I hope you enjoy it. Are you drinking?
Oh, I'm drinking.
Oh shit! I should have.
If you want, it's nothing crazy. Just a little like spritzer. It's white wine and seltzer. You know.
Oh shit! I got water. I got water. I'm good. You do you, man. You do you.
Drinking like a real Becky.
Yeah. No, dude. Hey, it is what it is, man. I bought some. That black whiskey, the Uncle Nearest. Have you ever heard of that?
Uncle Nearest? No, yeah. I don't believe I have.
It's I don't know how old it is, but people have been talking about it, and I bought some on Saturday. I was going to a party, so I brought some wine, and I said, let me check out this Uncle Nearest. It's like, oh, maybe. It's 100 proof. I'll try to share the screen with you so you can see.
Okay. So you've been going to parties and you started going out and being social, sort of acclimating yourself back into the.
One of my castmates had a thing because we all get tested 3 times a week.
Oh, nice.
And so since we're all tested, we just had a few of us went over to his place. And he made pizza for us, like handmade, homemade pizza and all that stuff. So I always like to bring stuff. So I went to Total Wine before the show, before I went into the city, and I got him some wine, 2 bottles of wine, and then said, let me check out something for daddy.
And a little stuff for me.
Yeah. And I've been hearing good things about it. And, that night when I got home, I tried some. I mixed it with some Coke, and it was good. It was good. It was nice. It's like, it was really good.
Oh, okay.
Smooth. I wasn't hungover. I just had one, though.
Okay. Yeah, you don't strike. I mean, we know each other pretty well, but like, I just never known you as like a big drinker. Like, yeah. I think as far as drinking goes, it would be fair to say you're more of a. You know, like mixed drinks. You're not like a beer guy or anything.
I'm more of a beer guy.
What?
You know what it is, you know. Well, you know, like it's hard doing what we do, especially living in New Jersey and doing stand up in New York City. It's like you have to drive most of the time. You know what I mean? Like you're driving, yeah. So you want to be responsible. We get paid in drink tickets most of the time when we're doing spots during the week. But like, yeah, I can't really. Do much like in the city. Like I'll have a couple if I do that, you know what I mean? But I'm not a heavy drinker, but every now and then you want like a nice little buzz, a nice kickback, watch an art house film and
yeah, get all classy.
Yeah, enjoy and like light a candle, you know.
Light some incense, play some Sade.
Yeah. A little Swedish taboo going on.
Yeah. Dude, you must be happy then. I mean, well, two things. Just with the Claridge opening up back again in Montclair. And we're going to get in the Alamo Draft House in the city.
I texted you about that. Yeah, I was excited. I'm more excited about the Claridge because I really loved that place because I felt like we didn't really have a place in Jersey that was comparable to maybe something like, I don't know, like an IFC or a Film Forum or
the Tribeca. What's the name of that theater? The one like right on off of Houston in the city.
I know what you're talking about.
Houston and Broadway. It's gonna kill me.
Is it just like the Tribeca Film Center or something? Or
no. It is how out of it I am with New York City life. I used to walk by that place all the time. It's like right in between Soho and NoHo, like right on Broadway in Houston.
Tribeca Film Center?
Oh yeah, maybe that's it. Tribeca Film Center.
Yeah.
Tribeca. Yeah. All right. Because I thought Tribeca, and I was like, no, that's the name of a city. That's the name of the town.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I don't know. But yeah, like I always talk about Jacob Burns Film Center on the pod, and I haven't been there in almost 2 years. I was thinking of trying to see the French Dispatch at some point.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, like it's kind of hard to get to those. So I'm glad that they kept it up. I was gonna talk to you about this. I'm wondering if it's gonna, how expensive it's gonna be. Like, is it gonna be is it gonna be crazy expensive?
All right. Well, first of all, the theater I was thinking of, Angelica.
The Angelica. Of course. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I'm so washed. I can't believe I forgot the name of the Angelica.
Go ahead.
As far as prices go, yeah, that's something I didn't really think of until, I guess now, too, just mention it. Because I know before, it was headed up by a Bowtie.
Right.
And they had those deals, like $5 Tuesdays or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, but now, I don't know. It seems like the whole area of Montclair, they're trying to, build it up and make it into, like its own little Brooklyn.
And yeah.
It's like a new Park Slope they're trying to do it. So if that means that I'm assuming whatever they charge for movies in Park Slope, they're probably going to charge in Montclair. Like I think we'll see a little bit of a price hike as far as that goes.
I wouldn't be too mad at it as long as there's parking and there's good quality stuff. And for the most part, I've never been disappointed in when I have trips over there to do something or anything.
Yeah, just, I mean, I think there's still going to be a good amount of parking, but you may have to pay for it. I think that's the one thing a lot of people in Montclair have kind of been noticing. Because, like, there were two, like, good-sized parking lots a couple of years ago where people could just park, pay, 25 cents or 50 cents and do what you got to do. But now they're, like, built, like, luxury building retails on top of both of those parking spaces. And, like, I have noticed, like, parking is getting a little bit more difficult around there. They just keep building so many more and more just luxury rentals, retail space. And it's just like, it's going to be too much.
Yeah. Like what happened with Long Island City in like the late aughts.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, exactly. Like when, back when the Creek was there and it was just, the Creek was like this one little oasis in the city where there really wasn't anything to do. It's kind of dangerous a little bit in Long Island City. And then before you know it, because it's near a train and you get this, it's by the water, so you get this lovely view of New York City, then like, oh, rich people should have this. So they just start building luxury retails, luxury rentals everywhere. And like, sure enough, if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
And I have noticed that a lot. Like anytime, if you live anywhere in the tri-state area and you're near a train that goes into the city, they're going to build luxury rentals near that train. My wife and I were in here in Bloomfield and we're walking distance from the New Jersey Transit where, they take you right into Penn Station. And, if you go to the, when we moved here, there was like, some empty lots, like a auto mechanic place, there wasn't much going on around there, especially like around the train station. It was just kind of whatever. And from, we've been here about like 10 or 11 years, and from the time we first got here to now, the change is drastic. Like I said, they built a luxury rental on the lot that's right across the street from the Bloomfield train station. They're building two more luxury rentals. They're the third that has retail on and has a supermarket. The supermarket is helpful because people in the neighborhood need the supermarket. Uh-huh. But yeah, but they're just constantly building more and more like luxury rental retails, like especially around the train station. Because I don't know, it's just because it's so close to the city. I mean, from Bloomfield to Manhattan, it's like about 40 minutes or so.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, they're doing the same thing here in Hackensack. They're throwing up so many condos and same luxury apartments. And so they're renovating the city. And like I've said it on the pod a few times where they're calling it the sack now. they're trying to make the sack happen. The sack is our city's fetch that they're that trying is, to. It's yeah, weird.
That is the worst nickname I've ever
heard. It is. It is. It's not, so it's bad. Not, it's so it's not, bad.
It's not catchy. It's not memorable. As soon as you hear it, you're like, oh, like saying the sack, it makes me feel like gross.
Yeah. Yeah. Just do the urban renewal and not, try to change the city. It's
yeah.
What's the point? Yeah. And they're building stuff up. So, I mean, I feel good about it, I guess. But Bergen County is just so congested that, you know, it becomes a shit show. And I was kind of on the fence about these blue laws, but just living here for so long and just being congested any time of day. Like there's days like if you take a day off and you have to go somewhere, it's just like, why is there so much traffic at 11:15 a.m.? You know what I mean? It's just like, yeah. Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like Hoboken bad, but
no.
It sounds
no.
like, I mean, Hoboken is just good Lord.
Dude, I haven't been to Hoboken in years.
No, I used to go back in my younger drinking.
Oh yeah, days. No, it used to be the shit, man. It used to be like when I first moved here. So, oh, you're going to Hoboken? And like, you know, that used to be the thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's. I mean, now they kind of call it like Bro Boken, just because it's so much like Murray Hill and full of like investment bros and whatnot. And
okay,
it has a very bro type of vibe about it now. I don't know if it was like that all the time.
It's always been that though.
Has it?
Yeah, I would say at least since in the 14 years that I've been here, it's been like that. It's always been like that type
so
of
bro. Shit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's always been that.
The SantaCon crowd.
Yeah, and then some of those dudes that I hung out with when I first moved here were kind of like that. They were nice guys, but they weren't assholes, but it was just like, they were kind of like that, you know?
Yeah, like the guys that kind of just came straight from work and still wearing the Oxford shirt and tie and, you know, the like Ari from Entourage is their hero.
Yeah.
Like that type of dude.
Yeah.
I know the type.
Yeah. So yeah, man, I hope it's good. Like I was gonna, cause I know you're always keeping up with stuff like openings and closings. I saw this, the Montclair, this Instagram account, Sweet Home Montclair. It's actually a bakery of some kind because the Claridge posted in their story that they have their chocolates at the Claridge. So you know they're stepping their game up where they've got like chocolate covered peanuts and raisins.
Oh.
$7. Dark chocolate almonds, $8. Sea salt caramels, $10. And when a place like that has like gourmet candy, like okay. If you give us like I didn't get a chance to go to the Montclair Film Festival, but I don't know that I would be doing that every time I go there, but I would probably try it to support. I would feel more comfortable doing that at a place like the Claridge as opposed to the AMC, even though AMC gives you points when you buy stuff.
But you feel like you're donating to like a mom and pop type of startup.
Yeah, I feel like we're putting back into the community.
I could see that. I mean, part of me, my, I don't know, maybe it's like the, just, you know, just growing up all, you know, not having much money and being poor. Like, part of me would probably be like, no, nah, just sneaking some candy. Just go to the CVS. Oh,
of course, dude. I would, dude, I snuck in a salad yesterday.
A salad? God,
yeah.
God damn.
That was my second salad sneak in. I snuck in. Yeah, dude. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I'm just salute. I just think of like a bag of chips or like a, you know, Raisinets. I never sneak a whole meal.
I was
meal.
Hungry. So what happened was like I didn't. I went to see Last Night in Soho. It was a 12. It was solid. It's worth seeing. It's not something you got to run to the theater to see, but it's just like, okay, I was entertained during that time that I was watching it. You know what I mean? Like okay. There's a turn. I mean, like Anya Taylor-Joy, I'd watch her in anything.
She's something else. She's on the come up right now.
Yeah, I always recommend Thoroughbreds to anybody that hasn't seen it. But that, you know, The Witch obviously is a big film for her that I need to revisit because I don't think I was all locked into that one. It's one of those weird A24 movies, but I always give A24 a chance, but she's great. I didn't eat any. I think I just had an apple or something, and I didn't have any groceries. So I was just like, I'll just go drive into the city and get a salad. So I snuck in a salad from Just Salad by my parking garage and snuck it in. But nobody said anything. I think in New York City, they don't give a shit. I don't think they care.
Yeah, in New York City, I don't see them causing a big fuss. Like, how'd you do it? Was it in, like, your backpack or something?
It was in my backpack, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it was in a cardboard container in a paper bag, and nobody, yeah, I just walked in. I saw a guy sneak in Chick-fil-A the other day, and I've done that before, too, actually.
Chick-fil-A?
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Lambert, they hate gay people.
They hate gay people, but I don't. And I was and I was hungry. And that's what was around the theater. It's hard, dude. We'd be naked if we protested everything.
Yeah, that's true. Like, sometimes I think about, you know, like, I try to be a good person and just, yeah, you know, donate my money to good causes. But at the same time, I buy stuff off Amazon all the time. And
I know.
They're horrible. Like, yeah. I can't even deny it. They're strictly horrible. So, like, I mean, I feel like the way to balance that out is just, I'll go keep doing Amazon, but then I'll donate money somewhere else or my time somewhere else.
Sure.
Just to balance out my karma and
yeah. Like a cool pack. I think Nori Davis told me one time you gotta keep your karma bar up. Keep the karma bar levels up.
Right. No, that's a good
Yeah.
That's a good way to be.
But I'm excited about it. Have you been out since the pandemic? Since, like, you know, you got vaxxed and everything. How do you feel about being in the world?
I feel pretty good. I still wear a mask when I go out. My wife still wears a mask when she goes out.
Oh yeah.
My wife is super careful. Like, she doesn't take off her mask for anything. I've met up with friends. We've gone, you know, at first it was like mostly like outdoor hangs.
Sure.
And, you know, around a few of them, like I'll take off my mask. My wife still won't. Then we started doing indoor hangs, but, you know, indoors with the doors open. Mm-hmm. I've hung out with John Minus a bunch of times.
Yeah.
We went to that really good, that black-owned soul food place in Montclair. Sweet Teas is really good. You should check that out.
Did we ever have a lunch there? Or was that somewhere else?
I think they weren't open yet.
Okay. We went to some other place.
Yeah. But, I mean, that place is, like, literally right across the street from the Wilmot. So, but it's
okay.
Food there is really legit.
What's the name of it?
Sweet Teas Southern Eatery.
Okay. All right.
Oh yeah, yeah. Food's good. But yeah, as far as going out, like, you know, we've hung out with friends outdoors. We're just starting to hang out with friends indoors more and more. Just, you know, our friends who we know are fully vaxxed and whatnot. Sure. We went away to a writing retreat not too long ago. And so it was just us and two other friends, and like that's pretty liberating too, because we just hang out around with other people, and we were all vaccinated, so we didn't have masks on there, and got a lot of writing done. Mm-hmm. And I mean, as far as the movies go, well, you know, I'll still wear a mask, but I'll j- just check out movies, usually like the early matinee. So yeah. There aren't too many people. I mean, and also the only movies I've seen in the theaters are like the big budget ones. So like Black Widow,
right?
Shang-Chi. I'm going to see Eternals. I'm going to see Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Yeah.
So, but part of me still feels a little guilty about that because I know not a lot of people are checking out like the smaller films in the theaters. Because I mean, I know it's like a big thing that the people have been complaining about or worried about in Hollywood where like, oh, only the big budget tentpole films are going to be able to survive this. Because like the smaller films, the more quieter indie films, people just wait till that comes on Netflix or Amazon or whatever. I mean, I don't want to be the person that adds to that. So like I'm going to try to see a film maybe at the Claridge or somewhere else as soon as as soon as I can.
Hey, if it's something that you want to see, then see it. You know what I mean? Like it, you know, if nothing is attracting you to go, then don't. I mean, I'm finding that a lot of interesting films that are just being released on VOD or something that I might've missed ends up coming out on VOD. I'll support it. I'll rent it or buy it or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've done that. Like I'll rent something on VOD and watch. I've done it for the podcast. Like I had to rent a film about Del Close that we talked about on my SNL Nerds podcast.
Yes.
I watched a comedy that not a lot of people watched. The Kristen Wiig and Amy Mumlow one. Or Annie Mumlo, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. It's actually really funny.
I liked it. Yeah, I did enjoy that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, this really just came and went. I didn't hear anybody talk about it, but it's actually a pretty solid comedy.
I think I paid $20 to rent that.
Whoa. I mean, yeah. I don't know if I do that, but it was just really
Yeah, I think it was in that window when it was like $20 to rent. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, there is a lot of good stuff out there, just like straight to streaming. So if I see something that from an artist I want to support and I want to, you know, see them grow, I'll give them the money. It's the same. I sort of see it the same way as when I buy music. Like I've been during the lockdown, I've been buying a lot of music off of Bandcamp and just been getting into a ton of bands just through Bandcamp. I've heard about like
what do you listen to?
You probably listen to Krungbin.
I've heard of them. Yeah,
they're really good. I really did. Yeah. They're like an instrumental band, but it's kind of like psychedelic, funky type of vibe. It's very mellow. Sometimes you can has a like really good groove and you can dance to it. But it's really good. The guitarist Mark Spear is like he's a maestro with that thing. So like I always speak the word of Krungbin wherever I can. There's this band La Luz I like really a lot. They're like early stuff is it's an all girl band and their early stuff kind of sounds like 60s surf rock type of vibe, but like now they're kind of more 60s psychedelic, but then like they all sing together, so you get like sort of really nice like 60 girl group harmonies and a little bit of like 90s shoegaze in there. I really like them quite a bit. It just came out with a new album. I remember I put that on my Instagram and Brandon Collins said, oh, I'll listen to this when I'm going to DC. And he liked it.
Cool.
So put him on to some new shit.
That's what you got to do, man.
Yeah. Let's see what else did I like. I mean, you know, Silk Sonic is always dope. I'm still waiting for that album to drop. I think they said it's going to come out in this month, actually. And I'm always just finding new stuff through Bandcamp, through the Tiny Desk shows on YouTube. KEXP, which is like a radio station, I think in Seattle, they always have like live bands. Like, I don't know. It seems like back in the day, I would have found out through bands through radio and, you know, MTV back when they were playing music. But like now I'm finding new stuff through YouTube and Bandcamp, and I'm just getting excited about like finding new music again and discovering all these new bands I never heard of.
Yeah, I just got on to Apple Music. Like, I had a trial and then I just stayed with them. And sometimes if you play a song that you want to listen to, they'll play somebody in the genre that you're listening to. I'm like, oh, what's this? And I'll just add it to my playlist and find out that that person has like four or five albums that I didn't know existed. And I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah. Like with La Luz, I was like, oh, they've been around since 2012. I didn't know that. And then like, I'll find this band like Viagra Boys that I'm listening to quite a bit. They're kind of out of a like a post-punk type of really gritty New York City in the 70s type of vibe, but they're from Sweden.
Wow.
And yeah, so it's like this rock band, but they also have like a saxophonist and there's a guy with a Moog machine. The lead singer kind of sounds like Tom Waits, but like their stuff is kind of, it's really raw, but it's also like you can dance to it. And I was like, oh, these guys are pretty dope. So I've been listening to them a lot. I listen to like all sorts of music. So
I know. How did you get such a wide variety, like such a you cover like a wide swath of music, like your musical taste is really expansive. How did you get like that?
I don't know. I've always just been into music. I remember when I was a kid, like, you know, my folks, my dad would drive me around. He would always play like Light FM or something. So like, I really got into Light FM then. So like, I was, cause like I grew up in the 80s. So everybody was getting into like Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick. And I was listening to, you know, Billy Joel and Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, these guys are great. Like, you guys ever hear Fleetwood Mac? And then I think from there, then junior high, I was listening to Top 10 stuff. So it was like a lot of, in the early 90s, so it was mostly like dance music, like Kathy Dennis, CC Music Factory. Mm-hmm. So I was listening to a lot of dance music then. And I think from then to high school, I was mostly in the, I got into hip hop. So like Tribe, De La, Heavy D and the Boys.
Right.
You know, Digable Planets. And then, like, I kind of went into kind of like, I guess, like barbecue music. So it was like, you know, Shalamar, kind of like that 80s disco funk grooves, like stuff you hear at a cookout, like, you know, Frankie Beverly.
Sure.
And Maze and stuff. And then from there in college, I got into, it was mostly like rock music. I'm trying to think of what was the one that kind of got me into it. It might have been, maybe Beastie Boys?
Did you go away for school? Where'd you go?
No. Queens College.
Using Queens. Okay.
Flushing. Yeah, I've been in Queens my whole life.
Yeah.
So yeah, it might have been Beastie Boys or maybe Beck, because like then I started listening to like a lot of the local radio, the local rock station. That's where I listened to Beck and Green Day, and then I listened to like a lot of classic rock because I was really into like Hendrix and The Who and, you know. Well, got into Beatles later, but then The Doors and stuff like that.
Did you ever try to play or sing or anything?
No. I was just like a fan of it. If anything, I thought about like being a DJ for the longest, but then I was like, oh, I got to buy all this equipment.
I could see you doing that because your shit is so expansive. Your knowledge is so expansive in music. Like, I'm always impressed.
Yeah, like I mean, I could probably DJ now, but just because of everything, you just got to need a laptop. But back then, you needed like, you need two turntables, you need a strong back, you need vinyl, you need all this shit. And I think so. Yeah. So then, after college, then I started getting to like '80s, like early '80s sort of new wave stuff, like Devo and the Smiths and Pixies is more like late '80s. But, you know, stuff like that. And, yeah, I just kind of listened to everything.
Yeah.
At this point, it was just, you know, it's just like always like a thing where I hear something like maybe a new type of music I didn't know much about. Then I kind of find like a, you know, like a little bit of a groove to it or something that I can connect to. Then I'm like, oh, I like that. And then, like, you know, before you know it, I'm listening to Lynyrd Skynyrd or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I think now I'm way more eclectic than I was when I was a kid, but it was, I don't know if it's just the result of growing up in PG County where it's like you have your R&B and hip hop. And then like, you know, my dad had the soul stuff, you know, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, Motown, all that, the standard issue things that he had. And then, then I think it was all like Tribe Called Quest was my base for hip hop. And then when I got to high school, that it became a little more expansive to like the really, and when I say expansive, it was like, oh, Method Man, Redman, Wu-Tang, and like hardcore, like, you know, like Keith Murray, Eric Sermon, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think when I first got into hip hop, I was listening to stuff that I could relate to more.
Yeah.
Like, you know, DJ Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince. Oh, they're just talking about summertime. I understand that, but then I've heard.
I understand like, seasons.
I understand the season. That's great. Yeah. But yeah, but then, but like hardcore hip hop was always around me, but I can never get into it. It's like, oh, that seems dangerous. Like, you know.
Yeah,
you
know, dude.
Like, that's not my lane. No, thank you, sir. But then I think it's one of the things why you hear a hardcore song, but you can't, the beat is so good, you can't deny it, so you listen to it more. I think for me, it might have been maybe Cypress Hill, like the first one, How I Could Just Kill a Man. Like, that is a dope beat. So I just like, all right, the beat's good, I'll listen to this. Or maybe, where was that? Dos Effex. Mm-hmm. They want effects. I mean, even though they're not like super hardcore, but they definitely have more of an edge to them. And then Onyx. Even though they're, you know, these angry bald brothers screaming in your face. Like, I couldn't deny the beat is dope. And they're from Jamaica, Queens, like me. So I was like, all right. And then that's how I got into that. That's how I was able to sort of get into, you know, maybe edgier, hardcore hip-hop. But, like, I still sort of had a more of an affection towards, you know, hip-hop groups like Tribe, De La.
Yes.
Hieroglyphics on the West Coast. And
right.
Far Side and stuff like that.
It's so weird that, like, before I got to high school, I was listening to Snoop Dogg and that G-Funk stuff and the MC8 and the Spice One and all that stuff. But then, like, when I went to private school all the way through elementary school, and there were kids that went to my Catholic high school that were, some of them were kind of came up in public schools, and they were like, you got to listen to Method Man. You got to know about ODB. Mm. And it was like, because when the Wu-Tang, I finished watching the Wu-Tang series on Hulu, which I really enjoyed it. And there were some of the, like, I didn't know a lot of that stuff that went on. You know, I watched the documentary on Showtime, but even at the time that came out like a couple years ago, and I didn't know all that stuff. I just knew like, oh, Method Man's cool. You know, like Method Man's good, because I remember like I was walking through the city yesterday and I put on Bring the Pain and I was like, wow. It's like that song is like fucking evergreen. It's still hard. It's so hard. It's so good.
There are still songs like that. If you listen to, you know, Mobb Deep, like it still hits. It's still strong. If you listen to Nas.
Yeah.
Like, Nas' first album is a classic. It's a flawless album.
Yeah, it is
it's flawless. All muscle, no fat. That thing is, you can listen to the first, to the last track, and it's all pretty damn perfect.
Yeah.
Like, there are, it is good to hear, like, there are some songs like that that just, like, withstand the test of time.
Do you find, I'm finding this, like, I'm 41, and, like, I had making a playlist of songs that I like, just continuously adding stuff to, the playlist on Apple Music, and it's just like, God, that's an old song, but it's still so good. Like, that song is, I'm at the age where I can say that song's 15 years ago.
Yeah.
It's rough. How does that make you feel when you think about
it? I don't know. It's a bummer. Like, I think I still remember the day I heard either it was like Nirvana or Pearl Jam on the oldie station.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, both those bands came out. And I was in high school. Oh, no, it's happening. It's happening. Yeah.
What's all this salt and pepper in my hair? What's all what's going on with the gray? Your beard's pretty dark, though. You don't have.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. That's another thing during the pandemic. Like, I grew out this beard.
Oh, you did? Was that you never had a full beard like that? You never rocked it?
Not full, like I've always had like a 5 o'clock shadow.
Okay.
At the most, but then like I've never just like let it go and
okay,
but you know, gone full Rick Ross or whatever, or you know, yeah. I never gone full Isaac Hayes until now, and now I kind of like it.
It looks good. It looks as long as the wife likes it.
My wife she likes it. Like, every time I ask you, she's like, oh, like, you know, no matter how you look, it's like one of those type of things. But, yeah, it's weird. Like, I don't, like, if you look really close, you'll see, like, one or two gray hairs.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know why. Like, I don't get too many grays in this thing.
There's nothing wrong with that. Hey, man.
Forever young, baby.
Yeah, forever young.
Forever young.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Like, I wanted to, I almost had a chance. I bought a ticket to, which would have been my first concert back, to see St. Vincent in Philly.
Ooh.
But I just didn't want to risk anything, even though I was vaxxed and like, I probably, you know, it ended up being like, it would have been too much to go on an off night from the play and just, I should, it would, it just would have been too much. So I just didn't, I ate the ticket, you know.
Oh.
But okay. But part of me is like, oh my God, I know she killed. Cause I loved like the stuff that she was doing. She did this. Have you ever heard of Moment House?
No, I'm not super familiar with St. Vincent. Like, I know some of her stuff and I, yeah. You know, I like what she did on Saturday Night Live, but I'm not super familiar with her stuff.
So Moment House is this service where like an artist, you could say, I think maybe a comedian's done it before, but like St. Vincent did this thing where she taped like about an hour production, like an hour concert, and they put it up on this site called Moment House. And you could pay like $15 for a ticket, a virtual ticket, and watch the show. And some of the arrangements that she did of like past songs are really good. And the current record, you know, and it's very a lot. She's got like black background singers in it. So I was like, oh, shit. OK, so it would have been funky to see. Like, it would have been really, really cool. Like, but
like Annie Lennox.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I was kind of bummed about that, but I was just like, fucking, I'm working. Hopefully, God willing, I'll see her. I've seen her so many times, dude. So it's not it's not the worst thing in the world.
All right. So you're ready to go back to concerts and whatnot? And
yeah, man. I feel like I'm in, and I feel like if you're vaxxed, you can kind of move on. Huh?
Are you getting the booster?
Yes. In a couple weeks. I'm getting it in a couple weeks. Yeah. So I'm happy about that, because you know, like, I wanted to see my parents. I got vaxxed as soon as I had the chance to. And so, like, yeah, I feel like you can almost operate, you know, quote unquote, like normal. Have you been getting back to stand up? I know you've been doing a couple dates, right, here and there.
Here and there. Like, I mean, when this all went down. Like, I kind of took it. I mean, it was weird how it all worked out, because, like, when this all, you know, this whole house of cards came falling down back in, what was it, like, March.
Right.
Like, I was getting kind of burnt out a little bit on stand-up, just because I'd been doing it for a lot. So I was like, oh, maybe I should take a break. And then the world decided to take the break for me.
Yeah, yeah.
The world was like, yeah, you do take a break. So then for a while, I hadn't done it. For most of 2020, and like for a while I didn't miss it, so I was like, oh, maybe I don't need stand up like I thought I did. Maybe I can find another creative outlet. Maybe I could finally finish that screenplay I've been talking about finishing, and like work on these other things. And I have been working on other things too. Cool. Like, I working with a friend of mine on like an idea we have for like a kids TV show and a book.
Okay.
And so I've been doing stuff like that. But then a friend of mine, I think it was in like October, actually, like probably like a year ago today. She said, oh, yeah, like, I'm doing this show in Bloomfield. It's in the parking lot of this bar. Do you want to come do it? And like, the place is literally 5 minutes away from where I live. It's almost walking distance. It is walking distance, actually.
Yeah.
So, and she said she was going to pay me and everything. So I was like, all right, well, I mean, it's right there. I'll do it. So then I went and did it. It was an outdoor show. Part of me was a little nervous just because, A, I hadn't done it in a while, and B, I didn't know what type of crowd I would get. You know, it was a predominantly white crowd. And, like, I remember, like, when I parked my car in the lot of the place and I walked towards the tent, I did see, like, a MAGA hat in the backseat of somebody, in the backseat of somebody's car. So I was like, oh shit, this might not
In Bloomfield?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know if that person was from Nutley or whatever. Okay. But,
oh, it's like, Nutley?
No.
The way you said it, is Nutley racist?
I've heard things.
Okay. I've heard things. All right.
But
it's still Jersey. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. But like, I did the show and it went really well. Like, I tried out some new stuff I wrote over the lockdown, and like that went well. So I got some new jokes in my arsenal. So I was like, good. Oh wow, okay. So I think right now I'm operating at this place where, if somebody asks me to be in a show, I'll probably do it. But if no one asks me, I don't know if I'll like chase it like I used to. So, you know, it's like, it's one of those things where
I hear you, man. No.
Yeah. So like, yeah. So like right now I do have, I have a show at the Rhino coming up, and then I'm doing cool. a Ritu Chandra show later this month.
I love that show. That show's fucking fun, man. That's a good, that's just a good, like, I like that drive. I like, I like doing that show. It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Ritu's totally dope. I haven't done the show in the new place. I did it in the old place.
Okay.
So it's been a while since I've been there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, I mean, I've heard nothing but good things about it, so it should be a good time.
Yeah, it'll be good. When do you know when that show is? You can plug it.
I think she said it got moved to a Wednesday. So I believe the 17th.
Okay. All right.
If I'm not mistaken.
November 17th. All right. Yeah. That. I felt nervous just like you the first time back. It was right when the, it was in May, right when they had the mandate, like the, they lifted, like, you don't have to wear a mask or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I, that was really weird. And I was, I had to get ready to work with JL in that June, and like a month away. And I did that show and I did like 9 minutes and I was like, okay. I was like, it wasn't a total, it was, I didn't bomb, but it was just like, I was up there. And then the next, I think I got a weekend somewhere at Levity, and then I felt okay about it.
Okay. Was it one of those things where you felt rusty, or like, did it all just come back to you like a reflex?
After the first time, I felt less rusty.
Mm.
I felt better every time after. After the first couple times, I felt okay. And then, yeah, like, now, like, I did a show a couple weeks ago at QED Astoria, and I felt like, after being off from, like, working on the show, working on the play, it was just like, oh, yeah, I feel good. Like, I feel good. And I want more, Darren. I want more stage time.
I'm thinking, yeah, I'm back.
I'm thinking I'm back. Yeah, I want to do... I want to do like more, because I want to work on an album. So I'm just like putting like working on stuff and working on new stuff, bringing stuff back that's not on the project that I put out, and just trying to like make 45 minutes. And, you know, so yeah, it's, I'm excited about it, but, you know, we texted about it. Like, I was like, yeah, I want to get back, but it's hard with my schedule right now. But
right. Yeah, no, you're Mr. Broadway over here.
Mr. Broadway.
Doing big things. Yeah.
Mr. Broadway. All of the debt and time is kind of paid off. So.
Yay. There you go.
Paid off. I'll live like a king. But no, it's cool. Like, it's just, I just want to, you know, be working, you know.
No, I hear you, man. I hear you. I guess, I don't know. I guess the thing is, like, if you're looking for stage time, it's weird because, like, a lot of the clubs and places we used to get up at, like, you know, aren't around anymore, or like,
yeah,
the whole Jersey scene's kind of shifted around. The New York scene has shifted around since, you know, the Creek moved down to Austin, and
yeah,
I've heard a lot of people say, yeah, the New York scene is really not the same anymore. It's like, I don't know.
It's different. It's like, I, you know, it's, and that happens, pandemic or no pandemic, like, venues open and close all the time, and you know, there's always these constant shifts, and I guess you just have to just stick with it. And I'm hoping, like, I did the Borgata in this past summer,
and that
felt good. Like, that, those shows felt good. And it was just like getting my, like, bearings together. And then now it's like, okay, what do I want to talk about? I'm going to address the pandemic, but I'm not going to let it, like, let that be the only thing, but just like,
right,
really having a purpose every time you step up. I don't think I always had that, but I think it's just even more honed in, even try to be locked in a little more.
Yeah. It's always weird to, or interesting to figure out how to tackle subjects like that.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, you have to talk about the pandemic, but then at the same time, you think, well, everybody's kind of talked about the pandemic, and maybe the audience is sick of hearing about the pandemic. So do I talk about the pandemic or do,
well,
I,
hey,
do
I look, are people ta- are, they don't, they still love to hear about relationships, you know? It's That's just true. How, it's just your take on it, how you felt about it, like what happened to you, I think makes it personal. Like that's what I'm trying to do. It's not necessarily like, oh my God, day one, this happened to me. And then like, it's just like, what happened? How did it affect you? Cause you see, I've seen, I don't know if you've seen this, like you said, like you're working on new jokes. And I think I had Gabe Pacheco on earlier in the year. And just like, we're talking about, what the fuck are you doing if you're just doing the same shit that you did like before the pandemic happened? Like, some people like, or just not addressing it, you know, not addressing the elephant in the room or anything like that. I don't know. Maybe it's just a taste thing.
No, that's true. That makes sense. You can't, I mean, after all of this, you can't just be like, oh, iPhones are weird, right? You gotta that is true. Like, I mean, I have done some of my old stuff, but that's mainly just to sort of get back into the habit, like find my rhythm, my groove, if you will.
It's okay. Like, if it's still funny and it's still relevant, then that's fine. Like, I've done my set is some of my old stuff, but it's also like newer stuff that I'm trying to do. So it's to each his own. All this shit is subjective, and in the scheme of things, it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah, but that's true. I always try to put in some new stuff just so I don't know. Like I mean, I'm sure like a lot of comics feel this way where they might feel like they're like a hack or something where I've always kind of conscious of that. Like I never want like a comic who has maybe seen my act before be in the audience and be like, oh, he's still telling that joke. Like I always want to have some new shit just to let them know that I'm still, you know, I'm working. I'm not just leaning on the stuff I know works or anything like that.
You know, now talk a little bit about this, like before the pandemic hit, you wanted to take a break. Did you feel like you just felt like you said you were feeling burned out? Did you just how talk about that a bit?
Yeah, sure. Well, I remember for a while I was just thinking, all right, well, you know, I had done a good amount of stuff and like I got on, you know, a bunch of stages and everything like that. But I don't know, I think at the time it was kind of hard. I was trying to think of like new material, new jokes, and for some reason it just wasn't coming to me. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that kind of taps into another fear. I don't know if any other comics have where they're like, oh, is my ability to make jokes just going to go away one day as I get older? Am I going to like lose it? Mm-hmm. And like, I guess for a little bit I had that where I was like, oh, is it just gone now? Was it just like a phase? Mm-hmm. Or maybe I just need to take some time off and like recharge my batteries and I'm trying to figure out what I want to do with stand up. I was thinking, well, do I just want to keep going and do this? Do I want to try to be like a writer on a show? Do I want to try to take this in some other direction? Do I want to, you know, what do I want to do? What am I doing here? Am I just going to get up, tell jokes, get a drink ticket and, you know, lather, rinse, repeat, or is this going somewhere? Is this just like a hobby or am I going to try to make something bigger with this? You know, what's going on here? So, like, I guess all those things were kind of going on in my mind, and then the pandemic hit. So that's where it was. So, like, I kind of used the pandemic to sort of, you know, power down and kind of reassess and, like, you know, try to write new stuff, grow a beard, of course.
Sure.
And you know, I tried to teach myself how to play guitar, too, because I've always, like you said before, like, I've always been interested in music and it just never occurred to me, hey, why don't you try learning how to play guitar?
Create something. You know what that's from, right?
Of course, Tenacious D, one of the greatest albums in the world.
Exactly.
You fucking sit in your tower.
I figured you'd get a kick out of that.
No, dude, me and my buddy John Accardo, we used to quote that movie like religiously to each other for like a good 5 years. Like that and Dave Attell's album, Skanks for the Memories, we just like quote that back and forth. So like I have those albums like embedded in my brain. So that's why I laugh so hard. Cause like,
no, that's all good.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for that gift.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So you're learning to play the guitar.
I learned a few chords. I'm still kind of rusty at it. I don't you know, I'm no virtuoso or nothing, but you know, I'm just trying to, you know, expand my repertoire, learn new things. I mean, I feel like, I feel like if you went through this, this thing we're still going through, and you don't like, you know, come out of it like a better person. You don't come out of it with maybe a finished manuscript, or you're down a couple pounds, or you come out with a new skill. Then I don't know, it's kind of a waste. Like I don't want to be that person who just came out of this and is like, oh yeah, I finally caught up on The Boys, or and that's all I did throughout all this. I finally watched Rick and Morty. Pretty good.
Yeah, I rewatched The Sopranos.
Oh, nice.
And I'm on season 3 of The Wire now.
Oh, but you've seen it before, though, right?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, I just want to close with some of the stuff. What have you watched, or what are you excited about, like as far as media is concerned? Because you're always posting on Facebook about like stuff that's coming up and like different shows and stuff. And then I want to talk about SNL.
Oh, all right, cool. Well, during the lockdown, I watched a bunch of stuff. I watched, I know it's one of JL's favorite shows, The Other Two. I watched that kind of hearing about it, like when it first came out, because it was first on Comedy Central, but now it's on HBO Max.
Right.
And, SNL connection, it has two people who used to write on SNL. They created the show, and I watched it because like I heard a few things about it, and it was like really funny. Yeah. I was like, it's like one of those pleasant surprises. Like, how come more people aren't talking about the show? It's like legit solid. It's a good premise. It is
funny. Yeah.
It has a lot of good inside jokes about the business, about showbiz and, you know, social media and how the two work together. And it's just like a lot of solid jokes in this thing. It's like, I feel like more people should talk about it. I watched that. Hacks, I saw. I liked that quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. Hacks was great. I enjoyed that.
Only Murders in the Building, I saw.
Was that good?
It's good. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's good. It's a solid mystery. I mean, you know the premise, right? The whole the podcast thing?
Not really. You speak on it a little bit. I haven't... I know, so I'm going to watch it. I just haven't gotten to it yet.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to spoil it, but the main premise is these three strangers live in this building on the Upper West Side, and through like some events that they find out and they bond over the fact that they all really love true crime podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Like they all listen to the same true crime podcast, and they're obsessed with true crime podcasts, and so they bond and sort of become friends over that. And then somebody gets killed in the building they live in, but it's looked like a suicide, but they think it's foul play. So they get together and then they decide to try to solve the murder and make a podcast about it at the same time. So that's it. That's the basic.
How's my girl Selena Gomez in it?
She's good. She's good. I mean, when I first heard about the lineup of all three of them, because, you know, Martin Short, Steve Martin, comedic powerhouses.
Titans, yeah.
Yeah, Titans. And then Selena Gomez. I was like, oh, that doesn't...
the singer? She's got a great agent.
Yeah, but like, I mean, she's bringing her own sort of vibe to it. Like, it's, cool. I mean, I think she knows she can't do what Steve and Martin do. So she's doing her own thing. And it kind of plays off that. She's playing a little bit more deadpan. Like her character's like kind of a... maybe like a Daria type of, or gotcha. Aubrey Plaza type of character, but it plays well off of their stuff too.
Yeah.
So I really dug that. Cool. Like everybody else watched Ted Lasso. I tried watching Mr. Corman, that show with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah. I kind of bailed on it. It was like,
oh shit.
It wasn't, I don't know. Like, and I think it didn't seem like it was kind of going anywhere. It felt like kind of meandering.
Okay.
Give me a little bit. And see what else did I watch. That damn Michael Che, Pause with Sam J, Queen Sugar, Insecure.
Okay. Yeah, Insecure is back, man.
Back, baby.
Two episodes in the last season. It's good. It's sad to see it go, but I'm glad that she got to end it. If it seems like she ended it the way that she wanted to, and if that's how she wanted to end it, I'm fine with it. So I'm just excited to see it all play out.
Yeah, it seems like she had a vision and she was able to see that vision through fruition, and it's I'm you can't ask for anything more than that.
Yeah.
So
what do you think of SNL? We'll talk about what you thought of SNL last season, And then maybe you, when they were, you know, like when they were doing the SNL at home episodes and how they, and then just kind of take it up to the current, you know, just your thoughts on that. You host a great podcast, SNL Nerds podcast with John Trumbull, and you guys break down the show every week. And even in, you guys still grind, even in the off weekends, you do like movie reviews and stuff.
Yeah, like when SNL is dark, we'll try to find like an SNL related documentary, SNL related TV show or movie. We just put out an episode about the original Ghostbusters from '84. Okay. You know, one of my favorite movies. And then we'll do like TV shows, like we talked about Ted Lasso and Barry. Another fantastic show. Can't wait for that to come back.
Yeah.
Atlanta is another one. I think Donald Glover just put like a little snippet teaser out online.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
That show is, people are starting to forget how good that show is.
Yeah, Donald was talking about how like people were trying to compare it to Dave when Dave was kind of an offshoot of Atlanta. Yeah.
I think it's one of those things where people have like, you know, goldfish memories where they're like, oh, Dave, this is kind of like Atlanta. And Donald Glover had to be like, nah, son.
Yeah. And Dave is good. Like I was skeptical and I watched that first season. I was like, what the fuck is this? And I think I was like, what is this? And then I was like, okay, all right.
All
right. And I enjoyed season two also. But I did not forget about Atlanta.
I know, like people have the short term memories, but
yeah,
I haven't watched Dave yet. But like, if you say it's good, I'll give it a shot.
It's worth checking out, man. It's a good show, and it's you will find. I'm not even going to put much on it, but I don't want to sway your thoughts to anything, but you'll find some surprises that are really compelling. I will say.
All right.
Yeah, that's all I'll say. I'm not going to say anything more, but it's definitely worth seeing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm done with that.
SNL.
Back to SNL. So yeah, when they started doing the SNL at homes, I mean, I thought they were really interesting. It kind of, you know, gave the show like a little bit of a new life, mm-hmm. in a way, because like I think a lot of people were starting to notice that the show was getting like a little bit stale. The cast is just way too big. I mean, especially now, like now they literally have like 20 plus people, and I don't know if that's by design so that like people can just go away and do the like other side shows. Like side hustles.
Right.
And then come back and do the show. But I don't know. It just, I like it better when the show is like nice and tight and you can see what everybody can do. Whereas with this huge cast now, it's easy for a lot of people to get kind of lost in the shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I've talked about on the podcast how Melissa Villaseñor isn't, you know, getting enough screen time. And
she, dude, I'm glad you brought that up. She is so good.
She is. She's starting now to get a little bit more shine, but I was like, I don't know. It feels like too little, too late. I don't know.
Like, she's so good. Like she did that they dropped it, the Hispanic Heritage Month thing that she did, like the in Weekend Update. Like, I was like, that was funny. I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. She had this like really nice joy and life about it. Like very. It reminds me of like Gilda Radner back in her day. She's just like really like kind of pleasant and like you see her smile is infectious. She makes you smile.
I think she's beautiful.
Yeah, she's lovely and like she just does really good impressions. Like her, like if you go online and like, you know, she's able to do a Kristen Wiig impression, which is spot on. She has a Kate McKinnon impression that she hasn't done on the show yet. And I don't know why, because her Kate McKinnon impression is like next level. It is legit. She's done, she had the really good Natalie Portman. I've noticed she does like a lot of good impressions of LA female comics.
Oh,
if you go online, she does a Whitney Cummings. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she does, Maria Bamford. That's like really?
I've never seen her Maria.
It's on YouTube somewhere. You gotta like dig and find it. But she has a pretty solid Maria Bamford in it.
She had one up last night where she was doing the grandmother from, she was doing Coco from Coco.
Oh, yeah.
It was really funny. She was talking about like how she used to have grandma Coco used to have sex or whatever. It just really, it might have ran a little too long, but it was funny. Like I don't know why she's not being featured enough. Like that's a thing where it's like, yeah, like you said, they got all these cast members, but it's like the ones that, and then on top of it, you plug in these celebrities that don't need to be there.
Yeah. Well, you mean like the host? You mean
not? No, just like
the celebrity cameos.
Guest celebrity cameos that just kind of take away from a lot of the talented cast members that they have.
Yeah, I agree that there was that one sketch during the Kim Kardashian episode where it was literally just all these cameos from celebrities. Yeah. And I was like, what are we doing here? What is this?
Yeah.
you gotta cast the 20.
You guys
people.
Hated that episode way more than I did. I liked it way more than you guys did.
I liked
her monologue though. I did like her monologue.
Her monologue was all right, but I don't know. I felt I'm trying to figure out how to. I don't want the Kardashian hive to come after me, but like I just.
I don't think they listen to this, dude.
Oh, okay. It's just like she just felt very like kind of stiff and robotic. And
oh, the delivery.
Yeah, but I mean, what she was saying was funny. Like, right. That's why I still think the best sketch she was in was the Lotto number one, because that's her character is supposed to be stiff and robotic. So I was like, oh, perfect. She got it. But, yeah. Like, everything else was like, I mean, unless you're one of those Kardashian stans who says everything she does is amazing no matter what, I was like, I find it hard to believe you think this what she was doing in the episode was that great.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, it was all right, but it wasn't, like, phenomenal. I mean, I didn't hate it as much as the Elon Musk episode, but it was still like, God, that made me angry.
Yeah, that was not. I love that Mayor of East Town sketch though. That
was the murder. Yeah, that was like okay, but everything. I mean, I understand why they have to put him in. It's stunt casting and it boosts ratings and like people watch it more on YouTube and stuff like that. But it's you know, at what cost?
Yeah, but back to your thoughts on the pandemic year.
Yes. So the SNL at homes, right? Mm-hmm. I liked them. I thought it was like kind of had like a very DIY feel to it. It kind of reminded me of like basically like if somebody put together a bunch of TikTok videos, with SNL cast members in it, it would look just like that a lot. It had like a very kind of, you know, low production, kind of homey vibe to it. Like, I haven't watched it recently again, but like, I feel like if I go back and see it, it's like, oh yeah, it has like a very kind of like once in a lifetime kind of homey, kind of, you know, DIY vibe to it. And like, there's something charming about that.
Right.
So yeah, I really dug those. And then they started to bring in the audience a little bit more and, you know, then I started to like that too, because then, you know, like stand up, like sketch comedy is something you really kind of need an audience with to sort of to get the reaction. Like, the, you know, like we as stand up comedians. I mean, that's the one reason why I didn't do too many Zoom shows during the lockdown.
I didn't do any.
I did one and it was all right. It was, I think, like Wilson McDermott somebody put me on a Zoom show. It was all right, but. For the longest time, I was kind of against it just because, like, you're just some man talking to a computer screen, you know?
Yeah. I did Drunk Black History, but that was more panel than.
Right. I mean, panel's different, or like a podcast like this, that's different. Yeah. But to tell jokes where you need to hear the audience's reaction to know how well the joke is doing or, you know, or what to tell next or what not to tell next, that's like a whole different beast. I mean, I remember hearing somebody say, we're like, stand-up comedy is like one of the only art forms where you need an audience to do it properly. Because, like, you can't do it alone. You need an audience of people there to, you know, bounce the vibe off of to see how you're doing or, you know, how to proceed going forward with your act. Or, like, what to cut back or, you know, play big, play small, pauses and all that stuff. Like, if you don't have an audience, you can't do stand-up. And, like, I think when SNL came back and they started doing these shows, then I noticed, oh wow, the audience really adds to these performances so much.
Yeah,
like they're feeding off them like a comedian would feed off an audience. So
it gave me hope. Like I will say, like I think I forgot who I had on when we were talking about it, but when they started going back to the studio, it made me feel good. Like it made me feel like show business was coming back, you know, like I think it was Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle and Bill Burr. Like right. It was like, yeah, okay, we're starting to come back. So it
right, like Easter Ray hosted, I think Adele was hosted an episode there. But yeah, it's one of those things where I think they knew, yeah, if we come back and sort of, you know, slowly bring back the normalcy, it'll kind of, you know, reinvigorate a lot of people and see that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, if anything, people just kind of want to get back to some new normalcy and
definitely
not feel like, oh, I guess this is our life now. We just,
yeah.
But so like, they just want to, you know, that normalcy can just go a long way to sort of easing a lot of people's, you know, fears and,
yeah,
and worries about the future.
What did you think? So how do you feel so far about this season? What are we, four episodes?
So far, so good. I think we're getting better. The Owen Wilson episode, I thought was okay. The Kardashian episode is, told you before.
Because you and John are like super nice dudes, like nice, positive guys, and when you guys were like, I did not like, I was like, oh shit, they really don't.
Yeah, I think really we do try to be positive, but I think it's one of those things where.
But you're honest.
We're honest, and we love the show so much that we don't, like, when it's not living up to what we think its expectations are or what it could be, we're
you
know, a little disappointed. We're like, oh, that should have. Well, what was that? You know, so.
Yeah, well, that's why I like it. That's why I like listening, because you guys provide more insight onto the show and you have your thoughts. But it's just funny to hear when you guys like don't like it. That's all. It's not a know, it's not a judgment. It's just like I was like, oh shit, they really.
Yeah, I mean, whenever we say negative things about it, it never comes from a place of hate. It comes from a place of, I know you can do better. Let's that's why I'm so upset with this sketch or the Elon Musk episode. Like I said, I almost didn't watch the whole show. I was so upset. But
wow,
it was.
And then one other thing before you continue, one other thing is, like, I appreciate you guys because there's a lot of fucking people on the internet. Some of our colleagues, you know, if they got the chance to be on the show, they would want to be on that fucking show. I would want to be on that show. I'm too old, but at the same time, if they were like, Chris, do you want to be on the show? I'd be like, yeah, I do. They try to act like it's not an institution. It's not like it is. Like,
yeah.
Stop like hating on it. You watch it every fucking week, like the rest of the people that love the show do. So
yeah, I mean, that's stand up. That's a lot of people where they shit on big institutions, like, oh, the Comedy Cellar, you're gonna try to get into that boys club, whatever.
Yeah.
And then if they were able to get into the Comedy Cellar, they totally go and be in the Comedy Cellar. Yeah, like one of the ones, all right, I'll go off on this tangent. Like one of the big things I really hate is when people on like when somebody on SNL makes news and somebody comments on Facebook's like, oh, SNL's still on? It hasn't been funny since insert year I was in high school.
Yeah.
Like all that, like, oh, like if when people say that, that just, I'm like, dude, if you think it had to be funny since you were a kid, then you clearly haven't been watching the new season. I'm not saying everything's a home run.
Right.
But there's some really good stuff in the new season. Like the Rami Malek episode, I thought was very strong. Mm-hmm. And the Sudeikis episode, I thought was really good too. So whenever somebody says, like, oh, it had to be funny since blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, it's funny. It's still funny. Whatever year you think it was the best, it probably wasn't as good as you remember it in your head.
Right.
Like, you know, everybody has a kind of rose-colored glasses when they look at the past and they think, oh, no, the Adam Sandler years, that was the best. Or the Will Ferrell years, those were the best. And, like, you know, those were good years, but not everything was great. You're just remembering the good. You just choose to remember the good stuff and think that was the end-all be-all.
Yeah.
Rant over. All right, what were we talking about?
Yeah, we were just talking about what, like, your thoughts on the season, like the first four episodes. Like, what you thought, how you feel like it's coming. What do you think about the new cast members and just any general things you want to say about it.
I think so far so good. I think we're slowly getting into a new era. I like that they're giving the new people more to do, more like James Austin Johnson. He just got here. He's been in every cold open. Like, he's getting so much screen time, and he's hitting the ground running. Like if you told me he was like a repertory player or he'd been on the show for years, I would believe you. And the fact that he's getting all this screen time and all this time to cook is I've never seen anything like this. It's amazing. And the other two, Sarah Sherman and Aristotle Atari, I mean, they're getting some spots here and there. I like that they're getting time to sort of show what they can do and showcase what they can do. The new writing group, Please Don't Destroy, those three guys. I know, like, when they first got hired, people were like, oh, it's nepotism just because two of the guys are, you know, whoever's sons and whatnot. So there was, like, a little bit of that. Like, that look, because one is Tim Herlihy's son and the other is Steve Higgins' boy. And so there was, like, a little, like, oh, nepotism. But
I didn't know that until you guys mentioned it. I was like, oh, shit. I was like, wow. I mean, it doesn't hurt, but
it don't hurt. But I know they've been in the New York scene for a while. Like, they've been doing shows at I guess Asylum, which used to be UCB. And it's like they've been around for a bit, and they are funny. They have some good comedic timing, and the sketches that they wrote have been funny. So it's like,
what was it? The Seltzer one, and what else?
There was one that got cut for time. The Rami Malek, where he wanted a treat for being good on the show. Did you see that? It was cut for time. It's on YouTube.
Oh, okay, I think I missed that one. Okay. It's YouTube, though, right?
Yeah. I would watch it. It's pretty funny.
Okay.
And they wrote a few other sketches I can't remember off the top of my head, but they're like, oh, these guys are funny. Like, basically, I like now that they're giving the new guys time to cook, because, like, the show, whenever they get, you know, a little bit of spotlight on them, that's when the show feels like has some, like, revitalized energy.
I agree with that. What's his name? Atari. What's his first name?
Aristotle.
Like, when he did that singer.
Say for me. Yeah. And that's a character he did at Just for Laughs.
Okay.
Like, that's on YouTube too. He did it at the JFL New Faces, like, literally in August of this year.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay.
But so it's a character he's kind of been working on for a bit. Sarah Sherman, I don't know too much about, but I know her. They say her, like, her style of humor is very kind of gonzo and in your face, and, like, she's into, like, kind of like bloody body, not body dysmorphia, but like her body. Her comedy is, like, not, yeah, it's she's more like performance art.
Okay,
but it's like it really pushes the envelope from whatever.
Gotcha.
But I like that they're getting more time to shine, just because, look, as much as I love 80 and Kate and Cecily, I feel like they really need to, like, wrap it up at this point, just because, like,
shots fired.
No, just because, look, they're really good. They're amazing performers. I've said on the podcast many times, 80 is a strong performer.
Yeah.
Kate is one of the greats. Cecily is a super strong performer.
But I fucking love Cecily and Schmigadoon. Like, I've had a crush on her. I bought her book. I read it in, like, one sitting, or, like, one or two sittings. It's a quick read.
Right.
I've really loved her in Schmigadoon. Like, that was, like, side of her good. She's great. She's great.
Yeah. That's another show I watched, Schmigadoon. It's really good.
Yeah.
Did an episode about that on the podcast.
Oh.
But I don't know. I feel like at this point, because they, starting next year, they will have been on the show for a decade. They started in 2012. And I feel like at this point, we've kind of seen everything they can do. Like, everything that they're doing now on is, like, some variation of something they've done in the past. And I feel like, maybe we should see new people and see what they can do. But like, that's kind of controversial to say, because so many people like them and they're so good at it and they just want to see them do what they do. It's kind of like, I thought about this a lot. It's kind of like when you come home and you watch, like, one of your favorite sitcoms that you've seen 100 times.
Yeah.
Over and over, you know, like comfort food, like maybe like something like Seinfeld or Friends or Parks and Rec or something like that. Or it's a sitcom that's really good. You know all the beats. And always makes you laugh, and it's good, and, you know, just it leaves you with, like, a nice warm, comforting feeling,
right?
And that's good, and that's great, and that's fine. But I mean, there's a whole bunch of other new sitcoms out there and a whole bunch of other new shows out there that you might like just as much, that are maybe funnier in other ways and different ways, that maybe they'll become your favorites.
Yeah.
Maybe you should just give those shows a chance. Just take off the nostalgia blanket for a minute over this one thing you like and try a new thing and just like move on and like, you know, try, you know, move on, make strides towards the future or whatever.
Well, yeah, dude, because I think you're right. I mean, I really enjoyed Shrill. I liked, I like, obviously love Cecily and Schmigadoon. Kate, I know she was making a run at being a movie star, but it's like, it's it in this generation, it's a little harder to do back when Will Ferrell was like at the, at his height, you know, when he was making his ascent. It's just the economy of it all. It's different. There's different variables involved that, that kind of keep you from doing that to a certain degree. But I mean,
yeah, I mean, Kate's doing,
what is she doing? Like, do you know what she's doing? Like her outside stuff or,
I mean, right now she hasn't even been on the show cause she's in Australia shooting the Tiger King movie.
Okay.
Or something like that. I think she's playing like the Carol Baskins character.
Right.
But,
okay.
But yeah, I see what you mean. Like, I remember seeing somewhere where they're saying like comedy movies just aren't as big now as they used to be. Like, I think the, maybe the last sort of hurrah for it was like the early aughts, where it was like Anchorman and Step Brothers and whatnot. Like, yeah, like big budget comedies just aren't popping like they used to. Like we talked about, like Barb and Star, that just kind of fizzled out and went nowhere.
Just like a that's almost like, even though Kristen Wiig's a star, it's like that is still kind of, and she's kind of been in that indie movie realm anyway. It's such a, almost all of those films that she's done have been a bit of a departure from the big characters that she's done on SNL. Like, like the Skeleton Twins, I thought was really good, but it's very dark. It's a dark indie flick.
Right. I haven't seen that, but so many of my friends say, yeah, you really need to check it out. It's like totally not what you'd expect Kristen and Bill Hader to do. So like, I probably will check it out. But yeah, maybe
you can do it on the show, like review it on the show at some point.
Maybe. I know Kristen Wiig. I mean, again, she was probably in one of the last big budget comedy films, Bridesmaids.
Right.
Like stuff like that isn't really popping anymore. Like I still think we did this on the show too. Pop Star with the Lonely Island guys. That's a hilarious movie.
I liked it.
And it just kind of fizzled out. And it's one of those things where, yeah, like maybe big comedies aren't popping like that anymore. I know Kate McKinnon tried to do like a bunch of, you know, comedy films like the Ghostbusters and the movie she did with Mila Kunis and Rough Night, and they all kind of did what they did. But yeah, like I don't know. I think Kate is kind of doing like a bunch of different things now. Like you know, maybe like TV shows and movies and Netflix films and whatnot.
Yeah, because I know, like, because when we talk about funny movies, like, to me, the last really funny one that I saw was Good Boys.
Mm.
And before that, it was Spy.
Oh.
Melissa McCarthy, like, 2014, 2015. And it was just, like, you'd see stuff that would make you laugh, but it was just, like, just a constant funny, like...
Right.
It's hard. It's hard now. I don't know.
Yeah. Actually, no, I take that back. The last one is another one we did on the podcast. Did you see Palm Springs?
Palm Springs was more of a...
I mean, it was funny, but... it was funny, but it was also kind of sci-fi.
Sci-fi, supernatural. I thought it was... I loved it. I really enjoyed that one.
I really liked that movie. Like, again, that's a film that should have been in... Like maybe 10 years ago would have been a big hit in the theaters, but not, you know, because it came out during COVID times, it got put to Hulu. And I think I saw some people were talking about it, but I feel like more eyes need to be on it.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where I guess now they're just pushing stuff to streaming and, you know, it does what it does. And if it goes viral and trends, then that's great.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, Kenan, what'd you think of Kenan? The sitcom.
Keenan. I only saw a couple episodes of it. That was okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was an interesting premise. I think I remember somebody online was like, oh, yeah, it's like Full House, but with Keenan.
Oh, and yeah, think of that.
It's like, okay, like a widowed dad of yeah, two daughters and his, you know, family helping him raise them.
Yeah.
And he's even like a host of a morning show like Danny right, Tanner was. So that's, I was like, right, oh, yeah, this is wow, like Full House.
Yeah, shit.
It's like, this is Full House. Oh, shit.
Yeah, it is. Oh, shit. Black Full House.
Like Full House.
Yeah, I thought it was, I liked it. I mean, I thought it was pleasant. You know, like something you watch. I like this. Okay, it's pleasant, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Those ventures have been, you know, the ones that I've seen outside of the show are just, like, pretty solid. But then you think you got a cushy gig like SNL and you like doing it, then why stay in these uncertain times? Why not mm-hmm, stay in these uncertain times? You
know? I think that might be the reason why a lot of people are staying, just because they don't, like, the future is so uncertain and yeah, they don't know what's going to happen to show biz, mm-hmm, you know, tomorrow. So, but they know Saturday Night Live is here and it's steady and it's dependable. So,
right,
you know, they'll stick around. And I, although I will admit, like, work. Sorry,
I just think all of them would be fine anyway. But
yeah, that's, yeah, they'll be fine. They'll get stuff. But I mean, Beck Bennett left, and I don't know. Part of me thinks like the show's, I mean, I probably feel like the show's a little bit better for it, because I mean, he was there for a while. He was there for 8 years, yeah, which is a good chunk of time. But now that he left, now we get to see what James Austin Johnson can do because of his departure, and that right, gives a new person who no one ever heard of, gives them a chance to become a star and shine and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, yeah, man.
So yeah, I think the show, in closing, sure. I think the show is kind of in this weird era where it's moving forward, but it's still kind of stuck in the old ways of the past. And I think it's slowly moving towards like a newer thing, which I'm here for.
Sure,
which is great. And at the same time, when I say that, I'm not trying to say there's something wrong with the right, past. Like the past is good. Like I mean Michael Che and Colin Jost are fantastic on the.
I enjoy the weekend a lot. Yeah.
They have a great rapport. Michael Che has, like, he always has, like, a solid joke, if mm-hmm, not, like, a handful. So he's dependable. He's great.
I love that. You guys pointed it out. What's the joke about the cops getting vaccinated? The joke that he had about that? I don't know. It's hard to remember.
The Chicago cops.
Yes, yeah.
Because it was him saying, "Oh, all these cops in Chicago are refusing to get vaccinated," which is surprising because usually cops can't wait to take the shot.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like that. I was like, "Damn!"
People were like, "Oh, he's like, you know, I'm right." So yeah.
That's why I like Che. I said this on the podcast. He's like the last, like, element of danger on mm-hmm, this show. Like I've heard some people say SNL works best when there's one kind of like a bit of a loose cannon where, like, they're going to say some, you know, stuff that may go over the line or some stuff that's, like, really edgy. Like, you know, yeah, Norm was kind of like that, you know, RIP.
Yeah.
You know, John Belushi was like that back in the day. And, like, Che is probably like the last sort of vestige of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, like, I'm hoping the show will kind of move on and get bigger and better, and you know, we have all these new writers on the show, Alex English and who mm-hmm, we know, and mm-hmm, yeah, I think it's like slowly kind of on the track to being like a newer show. It's gonna, I feel like it's on the way to sort of, you know, reinventing itself again and becoming like a new thing. Like, I think we're getting very close to getting into a new era.
Yeah, yeah, it's fun to watch, and I enjoy listening to your commentary, you and John Trumbull. Well, this has been great, Darren. Thank you so much for doing this. Plug anything. Plug the pod. Plug it. You got a show coming up on the 17th at the Horseshoe Tavern.
Yeah, that's it.
Boom. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. So, like I said, I have a podcast called SNL Nerds. I do it with my buddy John Trumbull. We're two comics in New Jersey. Talk all about Saturday Night Live. We break down the latest shows and, you know, what we like, what we didn't like. And when the show's dark, we talk about SNL-related TV shows, documentaries, movies, you know, the whole kit and caboodle. So you can listen to us anywhere you listen to podcasts. We're on the Non-Productive Network, so you can go to non-productive.com, listen to us there. We've got a Patreon if you want to, you know, donate some money. And you can follow us on Twitter at SNL Nerds Show. And as for me, I'm at Darren Credible on Twitter and Instagram. That's D-A-R-I-N Credible. You know, I'm a good follow, so follow me. I'll follow you back if you're not some, you know, weird bot.
Darren, thanks so much for doing this, man. I really appreciate you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.